Florida flyover country. This is Spin Sold Separately.
I am coming in hot today, guys. I am irritated about a lot of stuff. I don't have a whole lot of time. We're supposed to get our third snowstorm in about the last 8 days up here in the cornfields. I'll tell you, nothing says baseball season like 6 to 10 inches of snow. I complain about it all the time. Two of my friends spent the whole last week in Texas. One of them brought me a state flag. I've already got it up in my garage. Both of them telling me how awesome it is down there and how much I'd love it, and I don't doubt it for a second. But that's a lamentation for another day. Thank you once again, everyone, for joining me for Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. As I said, I don't have a whole lot of time here, but there are just a few things going on in the news world that I wanted to make sure I got my thoughts out on before they disappear from the news cycle, even though a couple of them feel like they're never going to disappear from the news cycle. But yeah, I'm pretty fired up about a couple of things here. And like I said, given the time crunch I am facing, I'm actually heading south for a few days myself, not to Texas, but my wife and I are going to be heading to Las Vegas for about 3.5 days coming up at the end of the week here. I have made clear in the past my affection for the band, the Eagles. They are my all-time favorite band. It is not close. They are number one with an asterisk on my all-time favorite bands list. I've been fortunate enough to see them once. I've had tickets for other concerts of theirs that sadly I was not able to make it to for various bizarre reasons, but that's a story for another day. But they have set up a residency, a shorter term residency at the Sphere in Las Vegas. Not sure if any of you are familiar with that. It is a brand new cutting edge facility for large gatherings. I think they had the NHL draft there last year, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's a concert venue. You know, lots of different acts have gone in and out of there, and it's in its brief history so far, but the Eagles set up a residency there starting last October that was only supposed to last a couple of months. I remember when it first came out, it was October, November, and you know, they've already said that they're not going to tour again. They said their last tour was their last one. They've posted all kinds of stuff on their social media saying it's, you know, all good things must end. It's time to close the circle, and this last tour will be our last. Well, that was before this Las Vegas residency became a thing. And for those of us who are fans of this band, I mean, obviously we know, you know, the opportunities to see them live are, you know, the days are numbered. I mean, most of the members of the band, the original members, I mean, sadly a couple have passed on, but you know, the ones that do remain, Don Henley, Joe Walsh, Timothy B. Schmidt, you know, these guys are in their late 70s. You know, a couple of them might even be 80, early 80s by now. But I'll tell you, I saw them a few years ago at XL Energy Center in Minneapolis. And yeah, they've keyed down a lot of their songs. You know, they don't sing as high as they once did. Of course, they can't, I mean, at this age. But they still sound absolutely amazing. They're all such musical geniuses that, you know, even keying down the songs, that they still sound so much like you remember the recordings being, or if you've been fortunate enough to see them live before. And I'll tell you, the music is still absolutely top notch. I mean, Joe Walsh, bless his heart, he's kind of like Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones. Like, there's no logical medical explanation for why they're still alive, given what they've put themselves through physically and with, you know, various addictions over the years. And I'm not pointing the finger at these two. This is not unique to them or their industry. I'm just saying for both of those particular performers to be the ages they are at, and yet still out there doing things that most of us could never dream of, and they're doing it in their late 70s, early 80s. Last time I saw Joe Walsh, he was still bouncing around the stage like he was 25 years old and shredding the guitar like you expect from him. It takes my breath away, that kind of talent. And so many of those songs, just I just love their style. That country rock style of the Eagles is just unmatched, in my opinion, for my musical tastes. And didn't want to pass up an opportunity to see them one last time. I mean, it's costing a fortune to go down there and catch one of these shows at the Sphere. I know a couple of people that have been to their shows there, and they've said that it's absolutely outstanding and worth every penny. So just kind of decided that that's what we were going to do, you know, before this residency ends. Meeting my sister and my brother-in-law and my nephew down there. It's going to be so fun. Just a couple of days, quick down and back. But I would have regretted the rest of my life had I not taken an opportunity to catch them one last time at the Sphere. So that is the plan for the rest of the week, and we have so much to get ready for. We're going to be on the road in about 40 hours, and I am not the least bit prepared. So without further ado, we are going to get to these couple of stories that I just wanted to comment on, have a little conversation about here before these stories completely disappear from the news cycle, because I do feel very strongly about a couple things that are happening right now. And you might be surprised by a couple of my takes on a couple of these things. And I'd like to think that that's what makes me different from, you know, a lot of the people that maybe you've gotten used to listening to and that I've gotten used to listening to. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. We all seek out what we enjoy. And I've told you who my regular podcast listens are, and I respect every single one of them. And I take the news stories as they come, and I listen to the differing opinions that I listen to on a daily basis. And I use all of that together to form my opinions. This particular last week or so has gotten me all fired up. So let's get right to it. I have mentioned in the past how important it is for this particular administration, the Trump administration, that I openly supported from day one. I've gotten into arguments about, I've gotten into debates about, I have spent hours on this show listing the things about his particular plan, his platform, the Republican Party as it currently sits, about what he had promised to do and work for once if he was given another chance in office. I make no apologies for the vote that I cast, for the support that I've given him and that I'm still giving him. Don't get me wrong here. But we have talked several times already in just the 70, 80-ish days of this second Trump administration, the uphill battle that he, by definition, is fighting against an endlessly adversarial media. I mean, people that have enormous platforms that are taking any opportunity, are just waiting with bated breath for this administration to trip up and to just pounce. We've talked in the past about the necessity for this administration, above, I would argue, all others, to focus. The visuals. You know, the killers are at the door, okay? They're right on the other side of the door, and they are just waiting for any opportunity you give them to come after you. This whole signal gate really, really has my blood up. I support, almost without exception, everything that the president has put out there on the foreign policy front. I think the team that he has assembled, I think it, well, obviously it was done on purpose, they share his vision of peace through strength. We're the United States. We are not out to hurt anyone. We are the guardians of the seas. We fund NATO disproportionately. We push back on the world's adversaries. You know, we're kind of the big guy on the block. That's just the reality we're in. And that comes with it certain responsibilities that maybe we wish we didn't have. You know, maybe we wish we could put those resources towards other things, but when you are the big guy on the block and your friends depend on you, your allies depend on you, and you've built the reputation of, you know, being the order keeper kind of around the world, like I say, keeping trade lanes open and making sure that our allies are not under constant threat or constant duress, that's just part of what it is to be the world's lone superpower at the moment. I have supported wholeheartedly this administration's foreign policy. Short of repeating a nightmare like the Afghanistan withdrawal, which our legacy media has chosen to conveniently forget, yes, happened under the previous administration, to the detriment of 13 American lives. 13 American servicemen and women lost their lives as a result of that complete debacle. Absolutely nobody lost their jobs. No generals. Nobody that was responsible for that mess, that embarrassment, that tragedy for 13 American soldiers was ever held responsible. Expect that the legacy media would leave that out. So that's just understood. This isn't even a discussion about that. This is again going back to the need for this administration to stop hitting the ball into the proverbial net. These are unforced errors for you tennis fans out there. This is the equivalent of lining up for one of those rocket forehands that you're going to put right down the line for a point, for a winner, and you launch it right into the net. Nobody made you do it. You didn't slip. You know, nobody shouted at you when they shouldn't have. Your racket didn't break. You just took a shot that was right there for you and hammered it into the net. That's what I see when I analyze this signal gate. For those of you that don't know what it is, a number of Trump's foreign policy team and national security team were on an app called Signal, which is basically a very secure, not impermeable, but very secure, like a texting app that a lot of government officials have at their disposal. It's on government computers, it's on government issued devices. And it is designed as a more secure way for high-level government officials to text back and forth in a form of a group chat, if you will. It's a more secure group chat, I guess, at its most basic level. Now, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, who I don't know really anything about him other than Trump had a very specific foreign policy in mind and chose former Congressman Waltz as his national security advisor. Also in on this conversation were Tulsi Gabbard, Pete Hegseth, a couple of other undersecretaries for these departments. And the discussion was basically about the plans that have since been enacted to go after the terrorist group, the Houthis, a terrorist organization that has been cutting off a very, very important shipping lane in the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. We don't have to get into the very specifics, but if an average year, about 25,000 shipping vessels, that's the word I was looking for, pass through the Red Sea for global trade. Well, that 25,000 has been cut down to about 10,000 because these Houthis, this terrorist group, has been terrorizing ships going through that area to the point where, I mean, they're attacking American ships, they're attacking American vessels, they're attacking cargo ships, to the point that, I mean, it's not like those other 15,000 ships just never set sail. they're just having to take a much longer route all the way around southern Africa to get from where they're going to wherever their destination is. More than half of the ships that would normally take the route through the Suez Canal have diverted around the southern tip of Africa because of the threat that this terrorist group poses. And this has been going on for years. And you've probably noticed, you know, things that you're ordering, you know, again, first world problem here, but, you know, the 2-day shipping that you used to get from Amazon is not anywhere close to 2 days anymore. It's closer to 4 or 5. This is a big part of the reason why. And, you know, there's more to life than how long it takes us to get an Amazon order. I'm not trying to oversimplify this, but there are real world consequences for this. All the, you know, the price increases that result, not just from the increased threat that these vessels are facing, but just the increased amount of time, the increased amount of fuel that these vessels are having to burn, taking the long way around Africa instead of cutting through the Red Sea, through the Suez Canal, and basically taking the shortcut to the Atlantic Ocean. So this has been going on for years. Under Biden's watch, this has been ongoing. The previous administration never had the guts to do anything about it. Well, if there's one thing the Trump administration has, it's guts. And less than 100 days into this administration, this national security team, with Trump's approval, decided that, you know what, we're going to push back on this group that is cutting off this key shipping lane. So the Americans went after the Houthis, bombing several of their locations and fighting back a little bit in that part of the world. I don't even know all the details of this particular exercise, but that is what this group was discussing on this Signal app in this group chat. The controversy comes in, well, at least the first part of the controversy comes in, where I believe the blame is currently falling on the National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, who somehow added the editor of The Atlantic into this particular chat. A man by the name of Jeffrey Goldberg. Again, he is the editor of a magazine called The Atlantic. The Atlantic is among the most left-wing publications in the country. I'm going to be straight with you guys here. This person was added by mistake. Is the story that we are being told is this person, this particular journalist, was added by mistake by the National Security Advisor to this group chat. And then this, I will use this term loosely, this journalist was then, he was just kind of watching this unfold in front of him. He ends up in this chat. He's not saying anything, but he ends up included in this chat, which all of a sudden, he starts to see all of this military planning coming across, you know, from, oh, geez, that, you know, Pete Hegseth, that's obviously the Secretary of Defense, and he's seeing stuff from the National Security Advisor and the, you know, from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, these are all people on this chat, and then somehow this particular journalist gets roped into this by accident. We'll get into the excuses, or, you know, I haven't heard an acceptable reason yet. We'll get into the excuses here in a minute. Just the fact that this happened at all, it's completely unacceptable. It is a complete embarrassment. And it, again, I can't stress enough how important it is for this particular administration to dot its freaking I's and cross its freaking T's when it comes to this stuff. Now, the debate can be had about whether or not discussions like this should be happening on Signal at all. There's actually a much higher level, far more secure communications, I don't know if it's an application or program or whatever it is, that discussions of the highest level, of the most classified nature, real military war planning or battle planning happens. And it should not, you know, apparently it shouldn't happen on this Signal app. But this is the first time I've ever heard of this Signal app with this story. So I don't know how hard it is to crack. I don't know how secure it is. You know, I'll grant that this conversation probably should not have happened on that particular app. But somehow, this Jeffrey Goldberg, of all people, got pulled into this again, they're going with the story by accident. That is what National Security Advisor Waltz has been saying, that somehow this Jeffrey Goldberg was in his phone and got added by mistake. Waltz is going with the story that he doesn't even know how this particular person, this contact, ended up in his phone, or how he got added into this chat. I am so annoyed by this whole thing, because the Trump administration has so many important things they need to get done, and they've been doing a great job of it. Look at the border. Illegal immigration is down, I'm not making this up, like 98% since Trump took office. His work on the border has been nothing short of amazing. How, you know, how quickly the situation down there has improved and turned around. The work that Tom Holman and that the border czar and ICE and the Border Patrol deporting criminals, getting this, as much of this criminal element out of our country as we can. You know, they've been acting so fast with so many executive orders on so many important fronts. They're already working on the budget. This is all good. And yes, they're gonna have to swim upstream on some of this, you know, given the very narrow majorities they have in both houses of Congress. And of course, that endlessly adversarial media, you know, to their credit, they are out there going toe-to-toe with every single day. You don't see this administration hiding or disappearing for days at a time like the previous administration. They are out there. They are as transparent as you could possibly be. They're answering hundreds and hundreds of questions every single week, again, from a very largely adversarial group of journalists. But to be able to get all this done, you have to maintain the political capital that got you in the first place, that got you elected. You have to maintain that momentum. You've got to be able to go back and say, look at how much we've done. Look at the border. Look at how much we've done for female sports. Look at how much we've done to secure the country. Look at how close we are to peace in these two foreign wars that were raging out of control when we took office. Look at how far we've already come on a budget, making these tax cuts permanent, trying to cut back regulation, trying to get companies to come back to the United States. This is all such important stuff. We can't afford to have stuff like this happen. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I haven't heard one acceptable explanation as to how this particular journalist, not just anybody, but one extremely adversarial to this administration, to Trump specifically, could end up in that chat, and how everybody in that chat is just going on and adding details and talking about this military action that's coming up. You know, again, this military action has already taken place. It was successful. Thank God no American troops were harmed. This could have been a real disaster had it gotten into the wrong hands before the actual plan was enacted. Thankfully, that did not happen. But I haven't heard one satisfactory explanation. Oh, I don't know how he got into my phone. Come on. Again, stop giving fodder to your opponents. Nobody believes that. Be honest. You effed up. And if it's that simple, okay. Don't ever effing do it again. And let's stop using semi-secure chat apps for high-level military preparations. Let's not do that. Just be honest. I still don't know how it happened. I don't know why it was him. I don't know if he meant to add somebody else with the initials JG. Who was it? You know, if there was somebody else that, I'm going with the assumption here that it was the National Security Advisor Waltz that was responsible for adding this journalist to this chat. Who were you trying to add? If this wasn't the right person, which clearly it wasn't, who were you trying to add? You know, go ahead and divulge why you have such an adversarial member of the media in your phone. It's not unusual. There's some very logical explanations for why that could be. I mean, these people in D.C. are in constant communications with each other, either for better or for worse. Not unusual that you'd have someone in your contacts that you are not friendly with, especially from the media. but I haven't heard one acceptable explanation. I know a lot of people have come after Pete Hegseth for this because he was, you know, and I'm going to go with the general consensus here, that he was sharing too much in this conversation, given what app they were on. And again, how nobody else figured out, you know, as they're having these high-level discussions, how nobody else figured out, what's this number I don't recognize? Or what's this, you know, who's JG? Or who, you know, whatever his moniker was. I don't know the inner workings of this app, but there's got to be some way to know who is in the chat with you. And I'm very disappointed that no one stopped and said, before we get into anything classified or strategic here, who's this? You know, can this person identify themselves? So I'm irritated by this, because what they did, of course, what's gotten lost in this scandal, that's what it is. Let's call it what it is. What's gotten lost in this is the success of the long overdue military operation that was involved here, that has already happened, that has already improved the situation in the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, that has already damaged the Houthis and their ability to disrupt shipping and attack our vessels. It was a successful mission. Not one American got hurt, and it accomplished the mission. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about that because this has completely taken over the news cycle for days since this came out. So I'm angry. I've told you guys, I love Tulsi Gabbard. I supported Pete Hegseth. You know, I had no reason to have any problem with the National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, up until this point. But the last thing this administration needs is unforced errors. And this is just another in what is an ever-increasing number of these that is just proving the detractors right. And boy, they can't wait to get on TV and tell you how right they were. Now, again, is this getting blown out of proportion? It probably is. This is another one of those things where, you know, you've cried wolf so many times, I don't actually know when to run for my life. You freak, the left freaks out about everything. The media freaks out about everything to do with Trump. So those of us that aren't complete Trump sycophants and are certainly not intravenously attached to the legacy media, you know, those of us with free thinking brains that are just here in the middle and just want what's best for the country, we don't know when the media freakout is real anymore, because the media freakouts have been very unreal for going on 10 years now. And this is the danger of crying Nazi or Hitler every single time Trump opens his mouth, because you never know when this is actually something to get worked up about. Now, I personally think this whole thing has been blown a bit out of proportion, again, because no one got hurt. The mission was successful, and we caught what would have been a massive security concern had conversations like this continued on that particular app, and people were getting added into these things just willy-nilly, which I'm not saying that's what happened here. People can make honest mistakes, even really, really critical mistakes. But just come out and own it. Just say what happened. Say what you did. Say you should have been more responsible. Say you should have been more diligent about checking. Okay, we're going to go through the roster here. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? What's your clearance? What's your security code? However it is you verify that who you're talking to is who you think you're talking to on these things, that should have been gone through in triplicate when you're going to be talking about things like this. And again, maybe stuff like this shouldn't be talked about on that app at all. I don't know enough about it. So no, I am not satisfied with any answer I have heard on this front. I'm just so grateful that no American soldiers were harmed as a result of it. And I guarantee that this is not going to happen again. That will be the last high-level conversation, I'm sure, that takes place among the security team on Signal. And I'm sure everybody is going to be quintuple checking who they are adding to high level confidential classified discussions. That all being said, I think this Jeffrey Goldberg is being given a very large pass throughout all of this. Now, to his credit, he did not divulge this before the actual military operation took place, and he did not divulge it in a way that would threaten national security. He basically broke his own story here and said, look, I got included on this chat. I know I'm not supposed to be on it. Here's what was talked about. And again, at the very beginning, he didn't divulge what he felt was sensitive classified information. He just said, I ended up on this chat with all these very, very important people, and they were talking about stuff they shouldn't have been talking about. Now, that's a fair assessment. It could have basically ended there had he just, he knew, okay? This Goldberg knew the first message he got, when he first got invited to this discussion on this particular app, when information started going back and forth, he would have known. This guy's been around a long time. He would have known right away, holy crap, I'm not supposed to be part of this conversation. I don't know how I got into it. I don't know who, you know, maybe he does know who invited him, but I don't know how I got in here. I'm clearly not supposed to be in here. He could have done the noble thing right from the start and basically entered this chat and said, look, you guys need to know that for some reason, I'm here. One of you invited me here, obviously by mistake, but I can see everything you guys are talking about, and I know I shouldn't be seeing this. You guys need to tighten up your security protocols and not have talks like this on a Signal app. And he basically could have just killed it right from the start. And then, you know what? Go write your story. He'd still have the story. But he could have ended it right away. As soon as he realized, this is a chat I'm not supposed to be in, he could have gone out there. He could have told whoever he needed to tell, look, stop. Get me out of this. I'm not supposed to be here. And then go write your story that, hey, the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of Defense, the Director of National Intelligence had somehow all managed to include me in a very high-level conversation without knowing they did it. This is a national security threat. Go ahead and write that story, because that's completely legit. Well, no, that isn't exactly what he did. He sat on it. He just sat there and watched the feed come through. Oh, you know, geez, there's some details about this whole plan. And everybody chiming in, and, you know, eventually Hegseth was giving, like, live updates as this military operation was going on. And he just kind of sat there and let it come in. I don't like that. If he had just stopped it right from the start and then wrote his story about how big of a national security threat this could have been, I would 100% be on board with that. Because it is. This was a national security threat. But don't try to play the good soldier when you sat there and let far more information come through that feed than you had to. He could have stopped it before anything high level or classified or, you know, stuff that shouldn't have been shared on that particular app. He could have stopped it before it happened. Well, he didn't. He wanted a better story. He wanted more dirt. That's my opinion. So he let it go. Until after this particular military operation had concluded, and then he came out with the story. Now, I guess, in his defense, hell, he could have sat on this for the entire administration. He could have just sat there and just watched everything happen before it happened via this chat for the next 4 years. Could have had the best story in history. So maybe I'm being a little too hard on the guy. But I feel like he kind of played the middle ground. He could have shut it down right away, which is what he should have done. Or he could have just kept his mouth shut and let this go on for years. You know, to obviously to the benefit of his own career. My goodness, imagine the book he could have written. So those are your two extremes. I think he should have gone with the first. He should have just stopped this right from the start as soon as he realized what was happening. Well, he didn't do that, but he also didn't just let it go and, you know, reap the professional benefits of what that could have done for him. But that's what I mean. The whole thing is annoying. I'm pissed that this group let this happen. because what they actually did militarily was so important and so well executed, but nobody's talking about it. They're talking about this, and this is going to go on and on. They want Waltz's head. They want Hegseth's head. These Democrats are not going to stop until they get a scalp, just like they did in the nominating process. 47 of them voted against Jay Bhattacharya for the NIH, National Institutes of Health. 47, every single Democrat. It was either 54-46 or 53-47 voted against Jay Bhattacharya. There is no cross-aisle support coming from these Democrats, and there never will be. That is the reality of that this administration has to face. They've got the majorities that they need. They're not big. They can get a lot of things done, but they need as good a PR as they can get. And stuff like this, and what we're going to get into here in a minute, the other thing that's pissing me off, this isn't helpful. In fact, it's completely counterproductive, and it just gives more ammunition to the people that will stop at nothing to drive your agenda to an absolute halt. And when you only have narrow advantages and you've got a media that's just drooling at the opportunity to go on TV and talk about how you screwed up today, you have to be more careful than this. And this is the third time that I've had to come on this show and talk about focus. We're not going to get many more chances because they're going to isolate too many squishy Republicans in too many purplish, bluish districts that are going to have to start withholding their vote of support because they've burned so much political capital in unnecessary ways. And speaking of unnecessary ways to burn political capital, the other thing that's really stuck in my craw right now. I came on this show for well over an hour and discussed Donald Trump at length. The pros, the cons, and ultimately the reason why, given the two choices we had for this particular election, that Donald Trump was my choice. And I don't regret it a bit. But that doesn't preclude me from criticizing him when I feel the situation calls for it. And boy, do I feel like the situation calls for it right now. And yes, I'm pissed because I put my reputation on the line. I put it on the line with friends, with family, with listeners of this program. I mocked Bill Maher for having the nerve to go on Megyn Kelly's show and on his own show, I mean, on a nightly basis, and say, this is the last election we're ever going to have if he wins. He will not leave office. And I laughed at it. I dismissed it as the ridiculous Trump derangement syndrome symptom that I took that statement to be for all the time leading up to the election. When I heard that come out of anybody's mouth, I completely dismissed them as a reasonable commentator of this topic. Trump gave a phone interview to, I believe it was it Caitlin Collins? Shouldn't have thrown her name out there. I can't remember exactly who it was. Let me look it up here real quick. I'm sorry, it was Kristen Welker. My bad. Phone interview with NBC News' Kristen Welker, during which a number of different topics came up, and some of them very good. I mean, he talked about how he's finally starting to put the pressure on Vladimir Putin, who has made an absolute mockery of the early attempts at peace in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Putin has done exactly what you would expect Vladimir Putin to do, and has, again, just made an absolute joke out of the peace efforts. Well, Trump finally said, you know what, I've had enough of this, and he started talking very seriously about how angry he is at Putin. He used the term pissed off about how he has approached these peace negotiations, and basically said, you know what, you've got a month before I'm going to start secondarily tariffing the countries that are buying oil from you, and we're going to hit you with as hard as sanctions as we possibly can. So that was good Trump on this call. Here's what really, really irks me. again, Bill Maher has been leading the charge on this, and I have mocked him at every possible turn, that the Constitution very explicitly says two terms for a president. We added a constitutional amendment, the 22nd Amendment, that says presidential terms are limited to 2 4-year terms. No one can serve more than two terms. Trump has always been very good about saying he will obey the Constitution. He will follow court orders. He's been very consistent with that. For as much time as this guy has had to spend in court, and this administration has had to spend in court defending executive actions and explaining themselves to unelected federal judges, he has always maintained that he is all about the law and order. He will follow the Constitution. He will follow court orders. He will file every available appeal he can. He will fight, but he will follow the Constitution and the courts. During this particular phone interview, Trump openly said, he's joked about this third term stuff before, and I dismiss it as most people who understand Trump on any level should dismiss it. At least that's what I've thought to this point. That, yeah, guy says a lot of stuff. He's a troll beyond all comprehension. He intentionally says things to get the media riled up, because he knows they will. He knows that no matter what he says, they're going to lose their minds about it. This one hits me different. This joking about a third term. You can joke about it. This conversation, and I didn't hear this live, but this, to me, takes it to another level. And you can think I'm taking it too far. The 22nd Amendment of the Constitution, which was ratified in 1951, prevents individuals from serving more than two terms as president. That's direct from a Fox News story here by Emma Colton. President Donald Trump teased he might run, I'm quoting from the story here, for a third term, explaining to NBC News that he enjoys working and is not, quote, not joking about making another run for the Oval Office. Quote, a lot of people want me to do it. But I mean, I basically tell them we have a long way to go, you know, it's very early in the administration, end quote. For now, he's, quote, focused on the current term, end quote, but told the outlet he was, the outlet being NBC News, that he was, quote, not joking about making a third run or making a run for a third term. He said, quote, it's far too early to think about it. I'm going to respectfully correct the 45th and 47th president of the United States and say, no, it isn't. It is never too early to follow the Constitution. If this ever gained any traction, and again, I didn't hear the story. Maybe he was, you know, maybe this is one more big troll job, and maybe I shouldn't comment on it before I actually hear the actual cadence in his voice and whatever, but I'm no psychologist. I don't like this. In fact, I hate this. This just puts the entire administration at risk, because when you start openly talking about flagrantly defying the Constitution, you know, a lot of Americans don't know much about the Constitution, and it is an indication of how far we have fell on the education front in this country that nobody knows anything about the Constitution. But one thing they do know is that the Constitution does not allow a president to serve more than two terms. I don't even like joking about this. Even if he's not serious about it, it just gives life to this ridiculous, what I thought was a ridiculous argument that he'd get in there and he'd break the entire Constitution and he'd never leave office. I staunchly defended against that and saying, no, that's absolutely not going to happen, and those that are saying that should be dismissed as just TDS kooks. Well, you heard the quotes. I hate this. I support the administration. Again, I'm not, given the two choices we had, there was no way I was voting for Kamala Harris for a number of reasons. We went over all of them. I hate this. This pisses me off, because so many of us, Mr. President, came to your defense when people used what we thought was this ridiculous argument. And we said under no circumstances would that happen. You're blinded by hate. Never in a million years would he do that, to even joke about it. is too much for me. Just like joking about 51st state with Canada. Now we're joking. He also wouldn't dismiss regarding Greenland, which I think, yes, we should pursue for a number of reasons. Economically, national security, global reach, you know, world safety. There's a number of different reasons we should pursue at any economic possibility trying to acquire Greenland from Denmark. He wouldn't rule out military, taking it militarily. Again, I don't know if he's bloviating on this front, if he's using that as a scare tactic towards Denmark. I don't know what his ultimate motivation is here. He does negotiate in a different way than any other president before him and likely after him. So I will leave room for that. But all of this loose military talk about Canada and Greenland and Panama, and now you put that together with this phone interview, which again, he could be trolling, he could be just wanting to take over the news cycle again, maybe deflect from Signalgate, change the news cycle. I will leave room for that. But I hate this kind of stuff. And if this is something that he is serious about, I'm going to be honest with you guys right now. As much as I support the current version of the Republican Party over the current version of the Democrat Party, this is a deal breaker for me. If there's any serious notion behind this, if there's any even exploratory effort by anyone in this administration, including him, on seeking a third term, I'm out. I'll sit at home. You will lose me for good. You want to push me squarely back into your opponent's camp? I've talked for weeks on this show about how far the left has pushed me into the right's camp because they've gone off the rails. Well, this is going off the rails in the other direction. This, again, I don't want to overstate this if this was a troll job, you know, whatever. I always leave room for that when it comes to Trump. There's really no reason to do this anymore. There's no reason to troll about stuff like that anymore because he's already won his second term. He's serving it right now. There's no reason to do this anymore. You want to use the hard talk about Greenland or Canada as negotiating tactics with other countries? I might not agree with it, but at least I can understand it. There's no excuse for this. Troll or not. Because if any meaningful effort went into a pursuit like this, talking about the 22nd Amendment, how can we get around it, or however he would go about doing this, I'll be honest with you guys, I am out, and I would encourage everyone else to be out right behind me. Because this is the stuff you don't screw around with. You don't screw with the U.S. Constitution. Fight your court battles, make your executive orders, follow court orders, file your appeals, take every case up as far as you feel like you can. If you honestly feel like you're in the right, and I think in most of these cases, I think he is. And the couple of cases that have ruled against this administration, they've stopped. They've followed the court orders. But this is on another level. And I'll admit, when I heard this today, when I heard that little part of the interview I did hear little snippets of, because I heard it on various podcasts, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish there. All that does is build up the resistance to you. And I'll tell you, with every statement like that, you probably lose another shred of people like me that are in the middle, that are not ideological, that just want what's best for the country. Well, I'll tell you what's not best for the country is a president talking about a third term. That ain't best for the country. And for those of you that, you know, maybe you think he deserves it, maybe you think, you know, if a president's good, just let him go, you know, FDR style, well, you better be ready for another FDR. Because this shoe will be on the other foot again someday. I know the Republicans have gotten very haughty since this election, as political parties tend to do when they clean sweep, like the Republicans did in 2024. The Democrats aren't going anywhere. They're not going to disappear Whig style. They're still there. They're still fighting. And now they've got a little pep in their step Whereas a week ago, they were infighting so badly, bumbling over themselves, talking about ousting Chuck Schumer, of all people. Because between nonsense like this, the loose talk about annexing Canada or Greenland or Panama, not ruling out military, and then this ridiculous signal gate, along with the litany of executive orders that are currently tied up in court. Now, that's not necessarily his fault. I think that's a lot of lawfare. I think a lot of that is strategic, trying to gum up the courts to slow down his agenda, even if what he's doing is perfectly legitimate, which I think a vast majority of it is. I think this is strategic on the part of the Democrats to basically gum the whole court system up so badly that everything grinds to a halt, because, I mean, the Supreme Court can't hear everything all at once. Most of these are going to end up at the Supreme Court. All this is doing is giving ammunition to your opponents. And like I said, this particular president has a hard 47% of the country that will never vote for him under any circumstance. And with every misstep, you shed a little bit of that 53% that is willing to vote for you. Maybe that didn't vote for you, but at least haven't completely ruled it out on the merits. But 47% of the country would vote for a kumquat over Donald Trump, and this administration needs to start acting like that. Do what you're doing policy-wise, because results are the only things that are going to change anybody's mind. No one's ever going to change their mind in that 47%, but you can lock up that 53% if you focus and you produce results. But this administration has gone very sideways on a number of very troubling levels. The tariffs, the loose talk about annexation, even if they're messing around with it. Now this, oh, I haven't ruled it out about seeking a third term. No. No. And somebody in that administration that has the clout needs to get in his ear and say, Mr. President, with all due respect, that has to stop. And I know Trump does not react favorably to people that disagree with him or try to correct him or try to correct course. Somebody has to have that power and have that influence to get in there and say, no more of that. You're not seeking a third term. It's against the Constitution. We're done here. It's not too early to start thinking about it. No. Thinking about it ended when he was elected to his second term. Case closed. That's how you'll lose me and people like me. And I will advocate against it if any serious push to make this happen ever became a reality. Be careful, Republicans. And this administration needs to be careful, because people like me will campaign against you if you start doing stuff like that and start talking about stuff like that with any level of seriousness. Hard stop. Focus. Oh, I had so much more I wanted to talk about. I've got a couple really good stories kind of ready to go, but I've got sound bites I want to play. Chuck Schumer, I felt bad for the guy for like 5 seconds until he went on The View and got his full body group massage. I've got sound bites from that. I've got all kinds of stuff I wanted to get into, but this is already getting to the time limit I like to try to stick with, and I'm too fired up. I'd have to gear down to get to that. So we will get to that, hopefully shortly after my trip to Las Vegas here. I can't wait. Got so many fun things planned. We're going to check out the Titanic Museum. We're going to check out the body experience, where you get to go on like this virtual tour of the human body. Can't wait. That's going to be awesome. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about that. I've actually been to the Titanic Museum once already. I have a level of fascination with the entire Titanic story. And I was fortunate enough last time I was in Las Vegas to go through that museum, and definitely going to do that again. It's just one of those things that, you know, just hits me really hard. You know, we'll do an episode on the Titanic once. I think I actually have it written in my notes to devote an episode to that, because, you know, we're over 110 years now, 113 years. April 14th, 1912 was the day the Titanic sank. So we're coming up on what, the 113th anniversary. It's going to get so far into the past that, you know, people are going to start to forget that it happened. And it's just one of those historical events that once I learned about it, I just became fascinated with it. So we will do a non-political episode on that. And believe me, I'd rather not talk politics every single time I come on here. But as you can tell, my blood is up right now on a couple of things that this administration has really dropped the ball on. And they have too much important work to do. They have too many good policy ideas and things that need to happen. And all you're doing is giving fodder to the opposition. That's all that does. So I am off to warmer climates for a few days here. I'm really looking forward to this time away, but with the news cycle the way it is, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about when I get back. I'm doing my best. I know I talked about doing two a week. It's just not, at this point, just not reasonable. The work schedule is just too much. I'm too gassed. You know, I have all kinds of great thoughts in my head throughout the day, and then I get home and I'm so wiped out that, you know, I can't think of anything I want to say, and I ramble. And like I said, I've recorded several episodes lately that I get halfway through and I'm just like, oh my, this is not savable. Pull it together or just wait for another day. So, but this one I had to fire off before we hit the friendly skies here for a few days, but we'll be back, and can't exactly tell you when the next show is going to be, but it'll be, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. And like I said, I've got so many ideas. I need to get on a better schedule here where this becomes, you know, where I have a certain set time of the week that I do this. And consistency is everything in this business, and I'm trying to learn that aspect of it. I've just got to get in better habits. So thank you, everybody, once again for joining me. This has been Spin Sold Separately, and I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Don't be afraid to criticize your own side. And I'll talk to you next time.